This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Not Quite Crazy by Katherine Bybee, performed by Amy McFadden. This one is for Kelly Martin, my sister from a different mister. Love you. Chapter 1. Smells like snow. Rachel glanced up past the skyscrapers and into the bright gray sky. Does it? It really doesn't snow in California? Julie asked. The two of them took a brisk pace around their building toward Romano's, where a hot lunch filled with way too many carbs awaited. It does in the mountains. Rachel opened the door, happy that her gloves kept the cold of the metal handle from reaching her skin, which I never went to during the winter. The heat from inside the small restaurant rushed against their exposed skin and resulted in a collective sigh. They had 30 minutes before the mad rush of lunchtime traffic in Manhattan, with lines out the doors and everyone talking at the top of their lungs. With 4 patrons in front of them, Rachel took her place in line.
I'll be the first to admit I'm not ready for your winters.
You're not ready for our summers, either.
Julie moved aside as a man who appeared to be wearing 3 jackets walked by with a tray full of soup and crusty French bread. The deli-style restaurant was the way to eat when you only had an hour to do so. Truth be told, Rachel was a little apprehensive about the weather. She'd left the 90-degree heat on the West Coast during early September and experienced the instant cool temperatures and change of the colors of fall in New York. They moved forward in line as they chatted.
I should probably get some chains for my car.
Julie shook her head, straight black hair brushing against her shoulders as she did.
I don't understand why you insist on driving in.
Public transportation scares me.
Of all the things to be afraid of, a subway isn't one of them.
It is when you haven't used them. They'd had this discussion before, one where Julie would roll her eyes while properly scolding her in both English and Korean.
Tell me how it works out the first time you find yourself in a ditch on your way home.
Rachel lived a little over an hour outside of Manhattan and took the commute as any L.A. native would, with a smile. The commute she'd had back home was twice the time, so she looked at her current situation as a win. I won't end up in a ditch. As the words left her lips, she instantly saw her sporty SUV sliding into snow-covered water with her emergency lights flashing.
I'll be fine, she said to herself more than her friend.
Everyone in California has a car, and none of us use the bus.
Like that matters in a place where it's 350 days of sunshine and 15 days of sprinkles.
Hey, it rains. Julie narrowed her already narrow eyes in Rachel's direction.
Whatever.
They both laughed and stepped up to the counter. 10 minutes later, the two hovered over a table as 3 other customers left. They slid into the recently occupied seats and made quick work of taking their first bites.
Weekend plans?
Julie asked.
Unpack. You've been here for nearly 3 months!
Every room needed fresh paint and a stupid amount of cleaning before we unpacked. There are only so many hours after work and on weekends.
Did you ever get to your room?
Rachel had made sure Owen was completely taken care of before working on her own space. Between moving to the opposite coast, changing schools, and finding new friends, it was surprising he smiled as much as he did. He wasn't a complainer by nature, a trait he'd inherited from his mother. Rachel paused and allowed the depth of her loss to move on.
I'm finishing up my room this weekend. How is Owen getting along at school?
He likes his teachers, is passing all his class.
That isn't what I mean.
Rachel spoke around her food. There are a couple of neighborhood kids who have welcomed him into their circle.
Same age?
Lionel is a junior. Ford is Owen's age. Rachel thought of the three boys the first time Owen had them over. For the first time in months, she walked into Owen's room to find him belly laughing at something one of the boys said. She'd leaned against the doorframe and watched them. And in that moment, she knew they were going to be all right.
I don't know how you do it.
Julie finished her soup and nibbled on the bread that came with it.
I can hardly take care of myself.
You'd figure it out if you had to.
Instant mom, changing your home, your job.
Same kind of job, different company.
Julie glanced at the man behind her who bumped into her chair while trying to climb into his.
When was the last time you went on a date?
Rachel glared. Are you going to ask me that question every week?
Yes, I am. You're too young to be hanging it up in suburbia alone.
I'm not alone. Rachel glanced at her watch and stood.
You have to promise me the first time Owen stays over at his buddy's. You're calling me and we're going out. You've been in the city for a season, and my guess is you've only seen the streets on your commute and the few blocks we walk to find lunch.
Julie was right. Rachel hadn't explored the city any farther than what her work mandated. A shame, really, but not something she could help.
You'll be the first to know.
The sharpness of the frozen temperature nipped at her lungs with each breath once they were back outside. She fished her gloves out of her pockets and pulled them on for the brief walk back to their building. She was most definitely not in California anymore.
Mr. Fairchild, your brother is online too.
Jason glanced at the light blinking from his desk phone. He signed the correspondence in front of him and lifted the receiver.
What's up, Glenn?
Ha! Try again!
Trent?
50-50 chance of screwing that up.
More like 70-30, with the amount of hours Glenn puts in compared to me.
It was nice having his youngest brother back with the company. Even if it was only a couple of days a week, when he wasn't gallivanting over the globe with his wife and humanitarian efforts.
Anytime you want to jump in, bite your tongue!
Trent wasn't a 9-to-5er, and, lucky for all of them, Fairchild Charters ran like the well-oiled machine that it was. Their planes spent more time in the air than most of their competition, the brokers found new clients every week, and their expansion across the globe had grown 15% in the past 24 months, with a company growth of 5-7% annually in the past decade. Things were good.
So what is the uncharacteristic Friday afternoon call about?
I'm calling to give you a heads up.
Oh?
Yeah, Monica and Mary have been talking.
Jason leaned back in his chair and focused his gaze outside his window.
Should I be worried?
About you? They found out you didn't make it to Robert's for Thanksgiving.
I was sick.
Which was only half a truth. He'd found out earlier that Robert's wife had invited a woman she had been trying to set Jason up with for 6 months. Seems like everyone was working the find-a-girlfriend service for him for the past year.
Monica isn't buying it.
Monica doesn't have to buy anything.
Like it or not, my wife cares. Neither she nor Mary will rest if they think you're alone for Christmas.
Since Trent and Monica had spent Thanksgiving in Texas with Monica's sister and her family, and Glenn and Mary were enjoying fried turkey on the California shores with Mary's best friend, it was safe to assume Christmas would include someone in Connecticut.
So, are they picking straws to see who is sticking around for Christmas?
We all are.
So, why are they worried I'll be alone?
They're not. But Monica is going to come over this weekend to plan, and chances are she's going to read you the riot act for not joining Robert and Liz for Thanksgiving.
She's coming to the ranch?
Yeah.
Why?
Because you have the biggest place, and if you're hosting, you can't flake.
I'm not a flake. Easter?
Jason thought back to the previous spring.
I was in London.
And what, you couldn't get a flight home?
It didn't make sense for me to fly home for dinner when I needed to be in meetings the following week.
Meetings you arranged at the last minute that only included a sprinkling of employees.
Fine.
Fine what?
We can have Christmas at the ranch. Trent laughed.
Was I asking?
No, and he didn't have to. The ranch was as much Trent's as it was his.
I have one condition.
Condition?
Trent didn't sound convinced.
Yeah,
no blind dates. When Trent didn't comment, Jason knew he'd pressed a button.
Trent? I won't set up anything.
You won't let your wife set up anything either.
Trent belly laughed.
Have you met my wife? I don't tell her what she can and can't do. It's what keeps me above ground.
I mean it, Trent. No setups in my own house. There was a pause.
I'll see what I can do.
Jason moaned.
If you just brought your own date.
Yeah, yeah. Outside his office window, he noticed the sky growing lighter. He stood at the glass and looked up.
Are you home?
Yeah, why?
Is it snowing?
Started about a half an hour ago.
Jason frowned.
Was it in the forecast?
He usually paid attention to those things.
Couldn't tell ya.
He returned to his desk and clicked around his computer until he found his weather station. From the looks of the sky, he'd already lost his opportunity to helicopter home.
If there isn't anything else, some of us have to work.
The sound of Trent's dogs barking brought a smile to Jason's face.
See ya.
He hung up and found his eyes drawn to the window again. The season's first snow was most often welcomed, but the last one was cursed, especially if it extended into spring. Resigned to the long drive home, he returned to his desk and turned to the never-ending stack of papers he needed to sign. Everything was fine, peaceful, even, until Rachel reached the city limits. How so much snow could pile up in only 5 hours, she didn't know. She hugged the right lane and let the natives in the area buzz past her on the left. She'd already sent a text to Owen, letting him know she would likely be home late. He responded with half a dozen emoticons ranging from snowflakes to snowmen. For him, the snow would be nothing but a reason to put the video game aside and get outside. On the highway, the snow fell at a slow, even clip, almost like a sprinkle of rain. When she reached her exit, those tiny flakes turned into quarter-size monsters that settled on her windshield wipers like drifts of sand that didn't want to wash away with the tide. It didn't take long for the asphalt to disappear, only to be replaced by the tracks of previous cars that had driven ahead of her. Slow and steady, she repeated to herself. Each stoplight was met with apprehension and white knuckles.
Stay green!
Her foot hovered over her brakes until she passed through. When she drove through the last town before this long stretch of nothing leading her home, it was after 7. Thankfully, the roads were all but empty. She reached a stop sign at a crawl. For one brief moment, her tires locked up, and she slid. Her heart squeezed in her chest, even though there wasn't any opposing traffic to hit. Rachel pumped her brakes until she managed to stop. Closing her eyes, she sucked in a deep breath and continued on even slower than before. First thing tomorrow, chains.
Not that she knew how to put them on.
How hard could it be? Less than 5 miles from her neighborhood, Rachel loosened her grip on the wheel. Confidence that she wouldn't be the California girl taken out by her first snow washed over her. The two-lane road with its tiny hill gave her pause. She felt her tires spin at the base, and instead of staying in the slick tracks of the drivers before her, she inched to the side of the road and let her chainless treads grip the fresh snow. Lights from a car behind her came up fast. Well, fast for the crawl she was doing. One eye on her rearview mirror, one eye on the empty road in front of her, Rachel mentally told the other driver to go around. She reached the top of the small hill as the driver behind her moved in close. Lights blinded her briefly before the other car shifted to the side to pass. At the crest of the hill, with no other illumination in sight, the other driver pulled around. One second she was releasing a long-suffering sigh, the next her heart kicked hard in her chest. The other driver lost traction, and the back end of their car started to slide. Rachel hit her brakes, realized her mistake as it happened. Everything spun a full circle before she managed to regain control. When she did, she was headed straight into the other car, which had settled in the ditch on the side of the road. She swerved, missed the car by inches, and came to rest beside the same ditch without dipping into it. Her heart sped. Her hands held the wheel in a death grip. Lights from her rearview mirror told her the driver behind her hadn't fared as well as she had. She shoved her car into park and jumped out. The boots on her feet were meant for the office. She slipped as she walked back to the other vehicle. "You okay?" she asked, long before she reached the passenger door. For a brief second, she didn't see the man inside moving. She grasped the door handle and pulled. Locked. Then he looked up and shook his head before disengaging the lock. "Are you okay?"
"Great. Just great for a guy with his car in a ditch."
He looked up, and Rachel forgot to breathe. Chapter 2. Jason wasn't sure which had zapped him more, the fact that he'd managed to ditch his car, or the bright blue eyes of the woman staring him down. No jacket, her light brown hair hung close to her face while snow settled on top of her uncovered head. Her cheeks were flushed with the cold. Her lips...
Good Lord, he needed to look past her lips or he'd start talking like a teenage kid with an instant crush.
He blinked, breaking the contact, and moved to unbuckle his seatbelt. With the car at an angle, he needed to crawl over the center console. The woman extended her gloved hand. "Here." With the grace of an elephant, he managed to get one leg over and into the passenger seat, and then the other, before taking her small hand. Outside the car, he stepped into half a foot of snow, and his Hugo Bosses slid. She glanced down. "Looks like you're about as prepared to deal with this as I am." He took in her footwear.
"At least you have boots."
"I don't think this is what Steve Madden thought of when he designed them." She shivered, closed her arms around her waist. "You sure you're okay?" Jason looked back at her car, the flashers blinking over the snow with every blip.
"My pride is bruised. My bones are fine."
He reached into the car, removed his overcoat, and retrieved his cell phone. She started moving from foot to foot, the cold obviously settling in. He handed her his coat. "Let's call from inside my car."
"Do you let strange men into your car often?"
Those lips smiled, and his stomach flipped. "Only during blizzards."
"This isn't a blizzard."
"It is to me. Come on, I won't bite." She didn't take his coat before walking back. Jason followed, his eyes moving to her license plate before he opened the passenger door and climbed inside. She already had the heater on high. Rubbing her hands together, she shook her head, sprinkling melting snow over the both of them.
"Thanks for stopping," he said.
"I almost bit it myself. Still kind of surprised I didn't, to tell the truth."
"I noticed your plates. California?"
She nodded, her cheeks turning redder as her body warmed. "My first snowstorm. I had no idea this was in the forecast, or I would have bought chains."
"Took me by surprise, too."
She found his eyes, and he realized he was staring. He remembered his phone and dialed for help. Nathan answered on the fourth ring.
Hell of a night, Jason.
His mechanic and keeper of the family's personal aircraft had a thick Scottish brogue.
Tell me something I don't know. What can I do for you, lad?
I managed to park my car in a ditch. When Nathan stopped laughing, he asked,
What are you driving?
The Audi.
Well, that would be your first problem. This is a Jeep kind of day.
Your words of wisdom astound me, Nate. He proceeded to tell him where he was and noticed his female companion looking at her watch.
How soon can you come? I need to finish up here, and I'll be on my way.
Finish up where?
I'm at Betty's. Her power is out, and she needed a proper fire set.
The widow, Betty, was on a property adjacent to his, but far enough away in a snowstorm to delay Nathan's trip.
So how long? Her road isn't plowed. I need to get back to the house and collect the truck. Might take a little time to find a tow. At least an hour.
An hour? On a good day, he wasn't 20 minutes from home. He considered asking the woman with eyes as blue as the sky to drive him there, but she looked about as anxious to drive in the snow longer as he was to sit in his car for an hour waiting for a ride.
Longer if you keep yammering at me.
Fine. Jason hung up, knowing he wasn't going to rush a man twice his age. An hour? His companion asked.
Yeah, tow trucks will be at a premium tonight. I can wait in my car.
She looked at him like he was crazy. And watch as another car comes over that hill and plows into you? He glanced over his shoulder. She had a point. I live close by. She looked at her watch again. And I need to get home. Why don't you wait there for your friend? He wanted to ask if her husband would mind, but realized how that might sound to a woman alone on the side of the road, much as he wanted to know her marital status.
You sure?
She lifted her pink lips in a half smile. You're not an axe murderer, are you?
Gave that up last week. Messy.
She grinned and looked through her rearview mirror. Need anything from your car?
My briefcase.
He opened the door. You might want to put your flashers on, she told him. A dead battery is better than a smashed-in hood. Jason's $80,000 car sat sadly in the ditch, and all he could think of was the next hour of his life in the company of a woman who looked like an angel.
I hope you're not married.
Thank you for this, Jason said as they inched away from his abandoned car.
It's all good.
He watched her hands gripping the steering wheel and noticed the tightness of her jaw as she concentrated on the road in front of them.
Does this have four-wheel drive?
I wish. When I bought it back in L.A., I never thought I'd be driving in the snow. First time for everything, I suppose.
She crawled through a right-hand turn, her eyes wide. Jason stopped staring at her hand when her words registered in his brain.
This is your first time driving in the snow?
Yep.
His heart skipped a beat, and his hand moved to his seat belt. He'd driven in the snow since he was old enough to reach the pedals. Easy to do when you grew up on 50 acres of private property that housed an airstrip. There was no lack of motorized toys growing up, and he and his brothers raced them all against each other. There was no risk of this woman racing. He tried to see the speedometer reading on the car, but couldn't without making his intention clear. If he had to guess, she wasn't going over 15 miles per hour, which would normally make his skin itch to press the gas.
You're doing well, he said.
She turned her head briefly and flashed a smile.
I think a turtle could move faster.
He almost agreed before she turned down a residential street and pulled into what he assumed was her driveway. Her sigh was short of comical when she cut the power to the engine.
You don't park in your garage?
I'm not completely unpacked.
She glanced at the closed garage door.
It's still full of boxes.
Oh.
She grabbed her purse from behind his seat and pushed out of the car. Jason followed her a few short steps along a snow-covered path to a small patio. He found himself holding his breath as he awaited what was on the other side of the door. One step inside, and his hope that this California-bred, reluctant snow-driving woman was single plunged.
Owen?
She's married. Of course she's married. Why wouldn't a woman with a snow-melting smile be married?
In here.
A young voice. Married with children.
She shook the snow from her jacket by the front door and started to take it off when a teenage boy walked around the corner.
I was starting to worry.
Jason stared.
The boy stopped short and sized Jason up from head to toe.
I made it. I told you I could handle it.
The boy spoke without looking at her.
You driving in the snow is like me taking a semi to school tomorrow. Who is this?
The kid was young, probably not old enough to drive himself, but he had spunk. She turned to him.
This is...
Her smile fell.
Oh my God, I don't know your name.
Jason Fe... You don't know his name?
Owen turned an accusing stare her way.
He was stranded on the side of the road.
She placed her hands on her hips.
Don't look at me like that.
Like what? Like you're crazy for bringing a stranger home? Like that?
I'm a good judge of character.
Owen didn't appear convinced.
I'm not an axe murderer,
Jason told him. Owen rolled his eyes.
Go get your dad. I'm sure I can convince him.
Owen pursed his lips together and narrowed his eyes.
His dad isn't here, she told him.
Jason was fairly certain there were several colorful words that exploded out of Owen's mouth under the cloak of a grunt before he articulated,
Don't tell him that, Rachel. He could chop us into tiny pieces by morning. No one knows us here enough to look for the parts he leaves behind.
On that, Owen turned on his heel and stormed away.
Owen!
Rachel turned to him.
I'm sorry. He's protective. Just give me a minute.
And then she was gone. Jason slowly set his briefcase on the floor and undid the buttons on his jacket. Rachel. Her name was Rachel. Dad wasn't there. And her son was black.
He drives an Audi.
Even as the words left her mouth, she realized how lame they sounded. Owen stared her down like a man and not a 15-year-old boy.
Jack the Ripper was a surgeon.
He had a point. She tried to make light of it. But Ripper didn't drive an Audi.
Was it an R8?
Rachel didn't even pretend to know what that was. Her eyes must have given her away.
You're hopeless.
He's just waiting for his ride. It's freezing out there. She paused and shook her head.
Why am I arguing with you? I'm the adult.
Because even your parents told you not to bring strangers home?
No, technically her parents told her not to talk to strangers. Not bringing them home was a given.
You're right.
Owen opened his mouth and then promptly shut it. She looked over her shoulder.
I'll drive him back to his stranded car.
No.
She stopped.
He needs to leave. You can't get into a car with a stranger.
I just drove him here.
She saw the moment his brain short-circuited with her problem.
How long before his ride gets here?
I don't know, an hour, I think. Owen muttered something under his breath and rubbed the top of his head like a man twice his age. And in that second, he reminded her of Emily. God, Em would often pull her hair out while solving a problem.
Why are you smiling?
Rachel attempted to stop, knew she failed. Being stared down by a kid half your age made you laugh. She bit her lip. With a roll of the eyes, Owen turned and walked back into the living room. Rachel followed and watched him track the stranger with a turn of the head when he walked past and straight to the kitchen. The rattling of a utensil drawer followed his disappearance into the other room.
Is everything okay?
It's fine. Something crashed to the floor. Owen muttered something she wasn't certain was appropriate. Then he emerged from the swinging door, holding a butcher knife and the cordless phone.
Owen!
He set the knife and the phone down next to what looked like the homework he was doing on the small dining table between the living room and the kitchen. He resumed his seat and glared.
Maybe I should wait outside for my ride.
Don't be ridiculous. Rachel took a step toward the table. Owen, that's enough.
As long as Mr. Suit doesn't do anything, I won't do anything.
Rachel placed both hands on her hips. Her amusement over Owen's actions started to turn sour.
You'll just end up cutting yourself.
I'll go.
No.
Rachel pointed toward the couch. Sit. I'll make us some coffee.
You?
She moved that finger to Owen. Finish your homework and stop acting like you were raised in Compton. With that, she stormed through the swinging door into the kitchen. Forcing a deep breath, she looked at the mess Owen had left from the frozen pizza he'd managed to make for his dinner.
Wow, she's bossy,
Rachel heard the man say. What was his name? Jason. He looked like a Jason. Owen said something she couldn't quite hear. The swinging kitchen door had felt a little retro when she'd bought the house. Now it felt cumbersome. She hurried to put the coffee on. By the time she stepped back into the living room, Jason had removed his coat and sat on the couch. She caught his eyes and looked at the top of Owen's head, which was ducked into his homework. When she looked back, she mouthed the word, sorry. Jason offered a smile and shook his head. Coffee will just take a minute.
That's great. What's your address? I'll let Nathan know where I am.
Rachel gave it to him and moved to Owen's side.
What are you working on?
She tried to ease the tension in Owen's face. He glared at her. She accepted his anger so long as he maintained a level of respect. They sat in silence while Jason finished his short call.
He's about a half an hour out.
Rachel wanted to tell him not to hurry, but the tension in the room wouldn't go away until he was gone.
That's fine. How do you take your coffee?
Black is fine.
She poured the coffee faster than a coffee shop waitress and brought it back. Owen hadn't moved a muscle, and she was fairly certain he hadn't progressed on his homework, either.
This is good. Thanks.
She took the seat opposite of Jason and tried not to stare. Short brown hair, blue eyes, strong jaw, the kind you knew Clark Kent would have, if he were real. Wide shoulders that looked at home in his suit. He didn't wear a tie. She wondered if it was a casual thing or if he'd lost it before getting in his car for the long drive home. Without thought, she looked at his hands for the first time. No ring. A strand of wet hair fell across her face. She closed her eyes to stop staring. The need for that hallway mirror was now pushed to the front. Not that she needed her reflection to know she looked a mess. Still, it would be nice to casually glance at herself and know she wasn't a complete disaster.
You weren't kidding when you said you're not moved in.
She followed his eyes to a box that doubled as a coffee table. Not yet. I've been doing the home improvement thing on my weekends before I clutter the space.
Looks like it's coming along.
Thanks. Owen and I have mastered the art of the paint roller.
Isn't that right, Owen?
He grunted.
Outside the living room window, the snow falling with the streetlight behind it looked like a scene from a movie.
This isn't going to be gone by morning, is it?
Probably not.
At least tomorrow is Friday. I'll only have one round trip into the city.
You mean to drive to work tomorrow?
It's a new job. It's not like I can call in for a snow day.
I wasn't suggesting that. You can take the train.
She cringed.
No, no.
Yet even as she said those words, she knew it was only a matter of time before she had to overcome the anxiety around public transportation. I'll leave early. Jason looked as if he wanted to say something, glanced at Owen, and changed his mind.
The trains are safe. Trust me, I've lived here all my life.
I've been told. She sipped her coffee. I'm just not...
She's paranoid of being mugged,
Owen announced. Rachel sighed.
Really? Jason asked. There aren't a lot of trains in California.
Do you take the bus?
God, no. Germs and mugging,
Owen chimed in. Jason glanced around the space.
Germ-phobic?
No,
she said, as if that was ridiculous. Owen opened his mouth, and she cut him off.
Drinking out of a water bottle instead of a drinking fountain is just smart. It doesn't count as a phobia.
Do you fly?
She blinked, happy to finally say yes to something.
Sometimes. Twice.
Owen kept announcing her secrets. Jason stared at her as if she'd grown a horn on her head.
It's a control thing.
Owen kept talking.
It is not,
she denied.
I told her she needed to get over it before I got my driver's permit.
She glared.
Don't you have homework?
I know someone who used to be afraid of flying,
Jason said.
Maybe you should talk to her.
I'm not afraid of flying.
She glared at Owen. I just like to drive myself, she said with a straight face. Lights flashed through the window as someone pulled into the driveway.
Jason stood. That would be my ride.
Rachel walked him the short distance to the door. He took a moment to put on his long coat.
Nice meeting you, Owen.
She opened the door and walked him onto her porch, slid the door almost closed behind her.
Thanks for understanding him.
He's being protective. Gotta give the kid points for that.
The man of the house collides with a teenage attitude daily. Jason smiled.
Rachel shivered.
He reached out his hand.
Thank you for braving a stranger in the storm.
His hands were warm, despite the cold.
You're welcome. Good luck with your car.
Jason hesitated, then turned and walked away. Chapter 3 Rachel allowed herself an extra hour to get to work, and she was still late. She skirted past the smaller cubbies and around the corner to her less tiny workspace. Julie popped her head up, looked around as if to see if anyone else noticed Rachel's lateness, and then started laughing.
What?
Rachel tucked her purse inside her desk and pulled her coat from her shoulders.
The look on your face is priceless.
You mean the I'm late and don't want my supervisor to notice look?
Yep, that one.
Too late.
The male voice behind her made her cringe. Rachel squared her shoulders and turned to face her boss.
I'm sorry, Gerald. I thought I gave myself enough time.
Gerald looked past her and toward Julie.
You owe me $10.
Julie pulled out her purse and she laughed. Both of them were smiling. Julie reached past Rachel and handed Gerald a $10.
What's that about?
Gerald waved the bill in the air.
Julie didn't think you'd make it here until 9. I had faith you'd make it before 8:30.
You were betting on me?
I'm kind of shocked you made it in at all,
Julie confessed. The tension in Rachel's shoulders started to ease. The streets by my house were a mess. Luckily, the snow in the city streets had been pushed to the side. Gerald waved a hand toward the high-rise window.
Most of this will melt before tomorrow.
That's good.
Do we have the Google proposal ready for Monday's meeting?
Rachel and Julie both said yes at the same time.
Just fine-tuning the PowerPoint.
Gerald turned and started walking into his office.
Rachel, I need a minute.
Just when she thought she was off the hook for showing up late. She glanced at Julie, who offered a shrug of her shoulders. In his mid-60s, Gerald was one of the longest-lasting company employees and a close personal friend of the owner's.
"I'm really sorry I'm late," Rachel started.
"I know you are. Please, sit."
She clenched her hands together and sat on the edge of the chair opposite his desk.
"Winters in New York can be brutal."
"I've been told."
"And driving into the city is a colossal waste of time."
"I've heard that too."
Gerald lifted his eyes to hers.
"When we offered this position, we knew you were coming in from California and sweetened the deal with 6 months of city parking. More than enough time for you to come to the conclusion that driving in is something you may want to reconsider."
She felt an intervention coming on.
"If I need to leave home at 4 in the morning to get here, I will."
"And what happens if Owen needs you at home and it takes you 3 hours to get there?"
She blinked a few times.
"I like you, Rachel. You bring a freshness to marketing we haven't seen in a while. You have the ability to pinpoint issues before they become problems. You're a leader, and quite honestly, I think you'll fit right in with the management team before your first year with us is up."
That had been the goal since she moved.
"I'd like that."
"If you opt out of the city parking, we will give the allowance in a cash sum that will pay for a monthly train pass and parking at the train station you'll need to drive to for over a year."
Rachel opened her mouth to respond, only to have Gerald cut her off.
"Not to mention toll fees and gas."
The denial of need sat on her lips. She swallowed it.
"I'll consider the offer."
"Good. Your first nor'easter is just around the corner, and that snow takes weeks to melt. Trash piles up. It's not pretty. You haven't lived until it takes you 2 hours to drive 4 miles in this city."
She didn't think that was possible.
One look at Gerald, and she knew he wasn't bluffing.
"Now go fine-tune your PowerPoint."
"Owen?"
Rachel walked into the house, tossing her car keys in a bowl by the front door and shedding her coat to keep the drops of water that fell off of it from trailing all over the house.
"We're up here!"
he yelled from upstairs. The familiar sound of cars skidding on pavement and the occasional outburst from a teenage boy told her he had a friend over who was racing him on a virtual track in a video game. Owen's laughter met her ears halfway up the stairs. Rachel paused and smiled. Hearing the sounds of normal lifted her spirits. She poked her head through the crack in the door to find Owen and Ford perched on the edge of his bed, controllers in hand, eyes glued to the flat screen on Owen's wall.
"Hey, Ford."
"Hi,"
he said, his eyes never leaving the screen. She looked around the room. An empty bag of corn chips lay on the floor. A half-empty bottle of water sat beside Owen.
"Did you eat?"
"I'm starving,"
Owen announced.
"Dude, knock it off!"
Ford turned his controller with his whole body, as if that would make the online car move in the direction of his arms. Owen obviously didn't knock the whatever off that Ford was talking about. Not that it mattered. Both boys continued to ram their virtual cars into each other while they laughed.
"I'll get something started for dinner."
Rachel was sure neither kid heard her.
"Are you staying for dinner, Ford?"
"That'll be great."
As she turned to leave the boys to their task of crashing and racing, Owen announced,
"There was a package at the door when I came home from school. I left it on the table."
"Okay."
She stopped by her unfinished bedroom, pulled off her boots, and replaced them with a thick pair of socks. The hardwood floors kept the old house the temperature of its basement, something she had yet to get used to. California homes didn't have subterranean space for storage, laundry, and spiders. Luckily, there were a few high windows down there that helped brighten up the place. But she'd vowed to drywall as much of the open room as she could and paint the whole thing in a shade of white before summer. Basements like hers belonged in scary movies with screaming women. neither of which she wanted anything to do with. Back downstairs, she clicked on her speaker and linked her internet radio station in. A new pop song had her humming as she walked into the kitchen. Before Owen moved in with her, dinner on a Friday night at home would be half a bottle of wine and a salad. Now that Sister Responsibility was her middle name, the wine was replaced with iced tea, and something had to go along with the salad. With two teenagers eating, tonight would be something filled with carbs. She scanned her pantry, hoping the meal would jump out at her. Pasta. Easy, quick, and she could heat up sauce and boil noodles without a recipe. She added half an onion and a handful of mushrooms to the sauce. Nothing fancy, but something to make her feel like she was actually cooking. A morphed cucumber and a moldy tomato ended up in the trash, reducing their salad to lettuce and carrots. A Saturday trip to the grocery store was in order. While the water boiled and the sauce simmered, Rachel found the stack of mail on the dining room table. She fingered through a few bills and tossed the junk to the side to add to the recycle bin. The box Owen had spoken of didn't have a mailing label. In fact, all that was written on the plain brown box was her name, her first name. She peeled away the tape, not knowing what to expect. Once she folded the lid back, she saw a handwritten envelope on top of a white canvas bag. It took a little effort to lift the noisy bag from the box. The sound of metal hitting metal struck her as odd. She set the envelope aside, unread, and opened the bag. Chains. Chains for the tires on her car. Who? She thought maybe Julie? Perhaps Gerald? Then she opened the note, and a second paper fell out. Rachel, thank you for braving this stranger in a storm and keeping me from frostbite. I thought maybe Owen would like to replace the kitchen knife with skills. I know the owner. First month is on me, if he is interested. Welcome to Connecticut. Jason. Below his name was a phone number. Rachel glanced at the paper that had fallen out. A flyer for a taekwondo studio and a name, address, and number were attached to a simple note that said, "Tell Bruce I sent you." Something inside her stomach flipped. The buzz a teenage girl feels when she notices a popular boy watching her from the other side of the classroom. Or maybe she was reading into it. Maybe this was just a thank you, a friendly gesture from a grateful, stranded traveler. Before she could consider her options further, the sound of water boiling over on the stove directed her attention to dinner. Back through the door in the kitchen, she relit the flame on the stovetop and turned down the temperature of the sauce. 10 minutes later, Owen and Ford were sitting at her small table, passing the salt. The boys were animated in their conversation about the video game they'd been playing and about the football team at their school. Neither one of them was on it, but each of them had an opinion on whether or not the team would make the finals. Rachel listened and would occasionally try and say something worthy of hearing. The boys entertained her comments, but redirected the conversation back to what only the two of them knew anything about.
"We should probably get there early,"
Ford said during the quarterback debate.
"Yeah, it's going to be packed."
Rachel pushed her plate aside, catching on to their discussion.
"Are you guys going to the game tonight?"
"We talked about this earlier," Owen told her.
"We did?"
She remembered something about a game last weekend, but hadn't remembered to put anything on her calendar.
"It's your turn to drive,"
Owen said, his voice more than a little annoyed that she'd forgotten.
"Unless you let me use the car."
She narrowed her eyes. "Nice try." Owen scowled.
"You boys clean the dishes. I'll change."
Owen stared.
"You don't have to stay at the game."
She shrugged her shoulders and pushed back from the table.
"I don't have anything else I'd like to do tonight more than go to a high school football game."
Owen looked between her and Ford.
"Fine, but we're not sitting with you."
She almost laughed. "I wouldn't think of it." An hour later, half frozen among several hundred teenagers and excited parents and alumni, Rachel tried to remember any redeeming value of sitting in the stands in Arctic temperatures when she could be at home painting a bedroom. Her gaze traveled to Owen, who sat with Ford, Lionel, and two girls she didn't recognize.
"I'm only here because you would have dragged me along with you, Em."
The lady on Rachel's right glanced out of the corner of her eye. Speaking to herself probably wasn't the best way to make friends. Rachel smiled and pretended to pay attention to what was happening on the field. The quarterback of East Ranch High looked like he was either on his sixth year at the school or belonged in college, and one of the linebackers had enough facial hair to be the spokesman for the crew of Duck Dynasty. Rachel didn't remember boys looking like men when she was in high school, and much like most of the adults in the stands, she wasn't that many years away from that time in her life. While she watched the spectators, something happened on the field, and half of the people in the stands stood and started to cheer. She stood, just to put some circulation in her legs. Their team had the ball and had stopped at the 5-yard line. The cheerleaders did their job of inciting the crowd, and on the next play, East Ranch scored the first points in the game. Rachel let the fans' excitement pump her up as she cheered. Her eyes landed on Owen once again. This time he was looking back at her with a smile. She offered a thumbs up before he turned back to his new friends. Yeah, that was why she was here. When you stepped into the mom role, you went in with both feet. Out of the blue, she wondered if he would be interested in something like taekwondo. Her thoughts immediately turned to the chains sitting on her table at home. She pulled the note Jason had left with his gift out of her pocket and reread it. Her cheeks warmed. Assuming he gave her a mobile number, Rachel opted to send a text. Besides, trying to talk to him in this crowd was pointless. "Hello, Jason. Owen and I received your gifts. They were incredibly thoughtful. Thank you." She read her note over, twice, then pressed send. Off it went, wherever notes went as they traveled faster than Superman in cyberspace. It was a good thing she understood marketing, because technical anything ping-ponged around her head until she was dizzy. If it weren't for Owen, they would never have managed to hook up the speaker system and DVR at the house. The phone in her hand buzzed, reminding her she was holding it. "Is this Rachel?" She grinned. "Do you leave gifts on everyone's doorstep in town?"
... "It is nearly Christmas."
Was he flirting? It had been some time since she'd sent a text to anyone outside of the friend zone, so she couldn't tell. "So you double as Connecticut's Santa Claus?"
"Shh, don't tell anyone. It's a secret."
Well, he wasn't not flirting. "I'll keep my mouth closed on one condition."
"Oh, what's that?"
Rachel's eyes no longer lingered on the field. "I want to meet Vixen. She's always been my favorite."
"I thought Vixen was a he."
She giggled. "A boy named Vixen? That's just cruel."
"Good point. I'll see what I can do. The team is on a strict curfew until after the holiday."
Rachel found a rolling eye emoji.
"What are you doing on this balmy Friday night?"
She glanced at the field, then found the back of Owen's head in the stands. "Freezing my butt off at a high school football game."
"Does Owen play?"
"No." She found Owen again, noticed him talking with one of the girls. "The girls are here."
"Ah, yes. I remember. Smart kid."
She stared at her screen for a full minute, wondering how she could keep their conversation going. "Thank you again for the gifts."
"You're welcome."
She hesitated. Maybe Jason was just being nice, and what she thought was flirting was just nice to another level. The visitor fans cheered from the other side of the field. After glancing at her messages and not seeing a ... She went ahead and put the phone in her pocket. He was just being nice. A minute later, it buzzed.
Rachel?
Yes?
Dot, dot, dot.
Would you mind if I text you again sometime? For personal reasons?
She squeezed her fist, grinned like a fool. Owen cheered from below. Did she really have time for this right now? My life is a little complicated.
I like complicated.
She rubbed her ear through the beanie, holding the warmth on her head.
You've been warned.
Is that a yes?
Rachel giggled.
Yes.
Enjoy the rest of the game. I hope your team wins.
It felt as if her team already had. Chapter 4.
When was the last time this place saw Christmas decorations?
Mary wiped dust off a plastic box Jason hadn't seen in years. Glenn stood beside him. The sadness in his eyes matched the feeling in Jason's heart.
It's been a while,
he told his wife.
Truth was, none of them wanted to warm the estate for Christmas after their parents died.
It wasn't that they made a conscious effort not to decorate, but they hadn't taken the steps to deck the halls, either. Mary pulled out a stream of garland.
Do you have pictures of where this goes?
I'm sure we do,
Glenn said.
All the albums are in the library,
Jason told her. Mary stood, brushed her hands together. Her gaze found her husband's, then she turned to Jason.
Oh!
She paused.
Are you guys okay with this?
The therapist and her emerged.
We can always buy new decorations if this is too painful.
Jason shook away the memory of his mother decorating the house and directing them to trim the tree, and the years he'd seen the same garland draped from the stairway banister.
Don't be ridiculous,
Glenn said.
We're good,
Jason assured her.
That goes on the stairs. Right. With the gold ball things I always manage to break,
Glenn added. Mary approached Glenn, patted his arm, and headed toward the library.
Come on, only 50,000 more boxes to bring in.
Glenn moaned and followed him to the storage shed. Although shed wasn't a fair description of the 1,000-foot building, complete with electricity and an alarm system. Nothing at the estate was done small. His father had spared no expense when it came to building his castle for his wife and children. He would talk about the day all of them were married and grandchildren would fill the empty rooms.
Good God. I forgot how much Mom loved Christmas. Dad was just as bad.
Jason placed his hand on the shelf containing the massive train that didn't just circle the tree like a Norman Rockwell painting, but encompassed the entire expanse of the family room, disappeared through a tiny tunnel and hidden door behind one of the curtains, and zigzagged up a grade and onto an elevated track in the formal living room. Yeah, the train system was an engineering marvel that took 22 minutes to make a full rotation. Glenn came up behind him and paused.
Should we? Would it be the same if we didn't?
Glenn shook his head and pulled down the first of a zillion boxes. It took a village of effort to make a dent in the decorations. Back at the house, Trent, Glenn, and Jason tackled the train while Mary and Monica trimmed every surface with green, gold, red, and silver. Lynn, the housekeeper, who had been with the Fairchild House for 15 years, lived in a small guest house on the estate. Now in her mid-60s, she'd raised her own children before coming to work for Jason's parents and lost her husband to cancer only 5 years ago. Lynn helped direct Mary and Monica and made the effort to prepare an after-decorating meal, which filled the house with the warm smell of roasting beef and onions. Outside, Nathan worked with Randy, an on-site groundskeeper who bunked with him in the accommodations by the hangars. Randy was new on the property, and not someone Jason thought would last for long. He liked the job, and did it well, but he was more of a designer than a gardener. Time would tell.
"It's a good thing Dad was anal about his train,"
Trent said as he peered over the schematics, written down as if the scaffolding